Intervju Radija Študent.
Pozdravljeni v Ereš intervjuju. Danes gostimo glasbenico Zoh Amba, ki prihaja iz zvezne države Tennessee. Njena glasbeno pot pa jo je ponesla prek San Francisca v New York, kjer trenutno prebiva. Njeno ime ima v svetu proste improvizacije čedalje večjo težo, nocoj pa jo lahko jamete ob 20. uri v klubu Gromka na serialki Defonija, kjer bo z Nikom Dunstonom in Chrisom Corsanom predstavila svoj projekt Bhakti.
All right, so hello again and thank you so much for taking your time. I was reading a little bit about you online, as much as there is to read. But I wanted to go through some things that, you know, you have expressed already in other interviews or pieces. But to start off maybe with, like, what was one of your first musical memories, if you recall? Like, what is something that kind of drew you in?
Hello. Someone just asked me this question, I think, last week. So I'm going to say the same thing because it's most prominent in my mind. Is when I brought home a saxophone, and it was a tenor saxophone, and I was playing outside, and it was really cold, and I didn't know anything about really anything. I could get a little bit of a sound, but I just was like blowing a lot of air to the horn and just exploring, and I kind of like tapped into this place, and I felt, tears running down my cheeks, and my shirt was soaking wet. And when I opened my eyes, I was just like, thank you, God, because I never thought that, I had a really difficult upbringing, and I, at the time, it's different when you get older and look back, but at the time, I didn't know that my, like, body could contain so much love and excitement towards living and towards just feeling something new that I never thought was possible to feel.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been kind of chasing that little feeling my entire life, really, now.
So it was kind of like a moment of revelation.
Yeah, for sure. And just knowing that there was more than what was kind of I was born into, like being able to find that somewhere else and something was really saved my life, really.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I read that you started off with the guitar and then you kind of went into saxophone.
Yeah, thank you for asking.
Yeah, of course.
I had a guitar beforehand and I had like a little composition book filled of pieces I was writing, and they probably weren't very good, but I really was serious. I'd like come home from school and be on the guitar till my mother got home and then stop playing, you know. I was like always cycling and cycling with the guitar, and it now I'm like working just as much on guitar than with the saxophone, so they're both kind of equal now, where before it was like very intensely guitar working, but nobody knew that because it was very private and very intense. It's beautiful. So, mm-hmm. Can y'all hear that? The song.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, and then at some point you kind of, I suppose, discovered the world of free improvised music.
I don't know what really did it. I think one of the first records I bought was Aretha Franklin's Spirit in the Dark, and I just started being obsessed with listening to all types of records. And I think, you know, I remember getting Wadada Leo Smith's record, Blue Mountain Sun Drummer with Ed Blackwell, and that was pretty life-changing. Seeds of a Forgotten Flower, that was pretty, like, expanded. That's such a sound.
Yeah, it's really prominent. I didn't expect it to be so. But anyways, we can pause and then...
That's Wadada's great spirit saying something sweet, I think. Anyway, he's doing really well. Anyway, he's in the States. But... I think I heard Wadada when I was younger. That really changed my life. And I also was listening a lot to, you know, Frank Wright and Bobby Few, which is the pianist in his band, and Frank Lowe. And I was really trying to listen to a lot of tenor players that, you know, weren't really being talked about. But Train, of course, I was really obsessed with Train and Billie Holiday and Lester Young, believe it or not. And it was just all beautiful. But yeah, I think when I was younger, about like 13, 14, I discovered Albert Ayler's, like I was listening to him, but his box set of interviews, and he was talking about his life and different things that really resonated in that with my upbringing, and it was really it was really inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
It was really like I listened to a lot of these souls, made me feel like they're inviting me to go in my own soul and deeply search, and kind of told me it was possible through their sound. And that's what it's like. A lot of people think you're trying to take something or be like something, but I think in reality listening is just like encouraging people to go inside themselves and challenge themselves and look for answers and question everything and keep questioning everything. Don't trust nobody up top, you know, and keep questioning, keep asking questions. That's what I think a lot of it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, to kind of stay on this for a while, I read that one of the connections that you made to Eiler was the fact that he was not allowed to practice.
Yeah.
Well,
I think he was. I'm not sure his situation exactly, but I just remember a story when he came back from, I think, the military, and he was discovering with his horn upstairs, and he was banging on the ceiling, on the floor, and in frustration, but also, like, I think it's not just the frustrating, there's so much emotion in that feeling of trying to find something in your clothes, and, you know, you're going through all this different feelings with it. And then we went downstairs, I think his mother told him, "You're not my son," and, you know, just feeling like not really seen or loved or held in those moments, which is really difficult moments to be vulnerable even with your own self, and needing others to like kind of recognize that in you, especially people that brought you into this world, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And some of us never get it, you know. I don't think I'll be one that ever gets it from my parents, but you know, there's always someone, you know, or there's always something that is really waiting for you with their arms so open, you know.
Yeah.
So it just depends on how you really observe the situation. But I'm going through a lot of different cycles right now with my parents back. So similar stuff. Weirder stuff. Weird, mm-hmm. weird stuff. Like these crows, you know.
Yeah.
Weird things. But beautiful things, you know. Difficult things.
Yeah. Everything's connected. And everything's connected.
Never seen anything like that. There's a bunch of birds, as you can hear, circling mm-hmm. in the sky right now.
As if the world knew that we're doing this interview and like
it's like very fitting to the different chapters of the questions.
Mm-hmm. Everything decided to sound right now, you know.
Yeah. But I will say, I have a best friend named Rocky Martin. He's in Seattle. It's my best friend, and he loves crows, and he told me how smart they are and how like beautiful their mind is and stuff. So thinking about Rocky if he ever hears this.
Also, like, you were in the beginning practicing in the forest and in the mountains.
Yeah, mountains, yeah.
Mountains, forest, yeah. Well, did that kind of shape the way you... Because I think practicing outside of the confinement of, like, a four-wall setting can, I think, be very liberating.
Yeah, I think... Yeah.
Sorry.
No, keep going.
Like, please. I mean, in the sense of, like, what we're doing right now and the birds are there and you hear all these mm-hmm. sounds, it kind of maybe subconsciously affect your expression as well.
Yeah, I'm sure. As a child, I wasn't aware of that. You know, I was just, I don't know, I was just obsessed with the music and with the saxophone and with trying to feel things. So I can't quite answer, but I'm sure, I mean, we're like people, human beings are like sponges. We adapt to our, you know, reality, we adapt to our environment. Like, so I'm sure, but it's in ways that I think are coming out now. But I can't quite describe like what those influences were at the time from an environment, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure. I just think I'm starting to discover those influences and things is the older I get, you know.
Yeah. And also maybe this is a good point of conversation where we jump to the. I don't know how it's pronounced. Is it Advaita Vedanta?
Yeah.
The sort of discipline
yeah.
that you practice. As
yeah.
Well.
But. Yeah, I deeply practice a certain thing, but I think I was searching for this thing my entire life. But I also think that, like, whatever pathways in religion are all so beautiful and sacred and get to the exact same place. So, and there's so many different ones and things that resonate with different people. But, yeah, that was something that really changed my life. But before then, I was searching. I grew up in the Bible Belt, so, and I still really love Jesus, you know. And I'm really devoted to different aspects of Buddhism and different aspects of, you know, all types of things, but that's like my main source of the center. But there's a lot of different other beautiful things I grab and
mm-hmm.
not grab, but see and hold mm-hmm. for a bit, you know.
But do you think like maybe that the proximity to, you know, different types of transcendental disciplines from a younger age kind of facilitated your relationship to be so open with music as well?
That's a good question. Maybe. I think it's very helpful, but I think for me, it was just like wasn't something I was really learning. It was just something that was like always there, you know. And in the South, I didn't really know at the time as a kid that there were other types of religions and stuff. But I don't know. As a kid, I always felt really close to whatever that thing is that we're all searching for. And yeah, maybe you're right. Yeah, maybe doing those things does like calm things and make you see things. Yeah, I think it's helpful, but you know, everyone gets to it differently in different times and places, I think.
Mm-hmm. Because for instance, like listening to Bhakti, I had this sort of feeling I wrote out kind of, it's supposed to be this devotional thing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But to kind of connect all these things in maybe like the searching for a source, finding the truth, you know, and how music in its core is also a very devotional thing.
Yeah.
You have to sort of surrender and
yeah.
serve it rather than...
Can I say something else that you made me think of?
Yes.
I think also, like, the way I'm looking at life these days is I think, like, every day even waking up is so devotional because it's a choice. You know, everything's a choice in your mm-hmm. life. And despite, like, whatever it is, like, your mind is serving this body. Like, having to take it around every day and work through the very difficult situations in this universe that are happening right now in so many people's worlds that are horrific. I think just... So, I don't know. You just think me saying that made me also think about just, like, deeper aspects of, like, what devotion really is. And it's, like, a very... thing that just happens even if you're not really consciously aware of such things are happening.
Mm-hmm.
But please go on.
That was a good I'm just trying to
that's my first dog in Slovenia I've seen.
Nice.
Sweet. Sorry.
To know more about like you know. So maybe on that note, like when you approach playing, do you have any types of like rituals that you do or like how do you prepare your body and mind to do a performance, to do an improvisation?
Yeah, I think the main things are just trying to have some quietness beforehand, and I usually don't like to talk before a show to anyone, but afterwards I love chatting and talking. I think about my heroes. I think about Bratzmann, honestly, a lot. Since he's passed out, I always think about him before I play, and I'm just like, maestro, help me get closer to it, you know, but not in terms of taking or nothing, but just spirit and energy and, you know, thinking about different things. I think about my grandma a lot. She's the strongest woman I've ever met in my life. And just thinking about different things. Sometimes, like, I don't know, maybe tomorrow I saw the moon last night here. It was beautiful. I've never seen such a beautiful moon. Or I've seen the beautiful moon, but not on this side of the planet. I think about that. Just trying to think about things that are make me feel good, like good memories. And just try to, like, slow down, just chill out. I never drink before a show. It's my thing, too. Things like that, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But no specific real deep rituals, just thinking of beautiful things and trying to be calm and grateful and calm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, like, you already put out quite a diverse portfolio, you know, like these five albums.
Yeah.
You collaborated with a lot of different people, but we don't necessarily have to get into, you know, has your insight changed through meeting all these people, through and also like with each separate album that you put out?
I don't know, to be honest. I'm sure, you know, it's interesting. The musicians I play with right now are some of the most inspiring people and selfless giving souls I've ever met in my life. Like this band here, Chris. I met Chris years ago on a boat in Germany, and when I heard him play with these two other musicians, which I think were named Thomas Lay, I forgot his name,
mm-hmm.
his last name, but beautiful musicians. I felt like that same feeling I felt like when I was hearing music for the first time, and he was up on the boat and I was too scared, too shy. So I didn't say anything, but I felt like this like little line of sunshine time around my heart and like piercing through the room into his heart. I don't know if he knows that. He'd probably be like, ooh. But he, we got in touch and we started playing a lot, and I was going through a lot of difficult times, and he was really the greatest person, soul, that entered my life around that time period and in life in general. And it's been the greatest blessing to be on this journey with him, and I think we've both, like, this tour, it's been, we've been on some tours together, like, this is a tour that we feel like, I look at him and we're both in a good place of life right now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing, when you know each other for so long, you see everyone at different places of life, and I think we're both really happy right now, and both, like, really doing really well musically, like, together, so it's nice to see. And then Nick, it's our first real time really playing together. We played together one time in Austria, just us, so it's really a blessing. And he's the kindest, most loving person, and beautiful musician. He does all types of media of expression of sound and just bass, but he's an incredible soul. And before then, I guess Bhakti, I thought that was going to be my last record. I didn't plan to continue on, actually, after that, and music at all. We're not music out in the world. So when I walked in that studio, I was like, this is kind of it for me, which was, I was fine with that. Like, I was consciously like, this is it. But Dr. Tyshawn Sorey, I heard him when I was about 18 years old in San Francisco, and he was playing, and I just looked at him, and I was just like, my t-shirt was... Hey, Chris Cassano, I was just talking about you.
What's up?
I was just talking about you on this damn thing. Sorry, Chris is going to go explore the city.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so Tyshawn was playing, and I was watching him, and my, like, t-shirt, again, was soaked. And then I seen him outwards outside, and we just looked at each other, and he gave me a hug, and he walked out the door. That was it. And it was, like, this deeper connection, and I feel like he really changed my life. He changed the way I... wake up every day. Changes the way I look at my own self and my own mind and evaluate things. I think Tyshawn is definitely one of the biggest influences on me to this day, in so many ways. He was so encouraging to me and so just a beautiful mind. And his work and art is like so sacred. It's beyond anything in this universe, and it's is everything in this universe, you know. And to I never recorded him with work or worked with him, but Wadada Lee Smith also was like big, huge movement in my life right now of like viewing things and seeing things and witnessing things and such. So I'm trying to think of anybody else. I hate name dropping, but no, these are just things that are like happening right now of people and souls I've been around intensely recently.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a lot of great friends, and it took me, I had a hard time in New York. And I've had some really sacred friends, like this, I'm gonna name drop this soul, Gabby Fluke Mogul, who's they're the most sacred artist and musician, and they're doing so many things of their own work. And they're my best friend, they're like my family in New York, and we don't have any records together, but we played a lot together, and they were just the most beautiful souls, and yeah.
Mm. But so, after the whole potential closure thing of Bhakti,
yeah,
you kind of decided to keep on, like now with the Sun Ensemble.
Yeah, you do what God wills, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I, whatever God wants me to do, I'll do it, you know. If it's, you know, God only wants me to do things that are peaceful, so not like not like God wills this or that, but whatever God wills in my life, I just am pushing on and trying to do the best I can. And I feel really grateful for, you know, touring and getting to make music every night is the greatest blessing and the closest to being close to that feeling I think I've ever felt. So I'm just going to keep on doing it until it doesn't feel like that anymore. But so far it just grows and grows, so we'll see what happens. I remember, you know, Keiji Haino?
No.
He's a very beautiful musician in Japan, but I was listening to one of his interviews before, and they're like, basically, you know, when you're in music and you kind of tap into this place, like, are you scared you're not going to come back? That was one of the questions they asked him. And he's like, no, because I want to come back. Like, I have a cat to feed and stuff. And I approach that, like, when every night when we play, I, like, hope to God takes me, like, right then, and I never have to come back. So every time I'm playing, I try to get to that feeling. It doesn't happen every night. And I used to be really upset because it wouldn't happen every night. And because the music would be great, but sometimes it wouldn't happen. And it would be really hard emotionally and, like, and you're touring for a long period of time, like, but as you get older, you realize it's not really about, I know it's so silly and cheesy, but it's not, like, the goal, it's, like, the destination is such a silly quote, but it's really true, like, every step of the way is much more important than the final result of a lifetime or whatever, so I'm just part of growing up and being more slow and patient for your own self, not for things in this world, but patient for your own mind and, you know, saxophone, you know, and all these things. And I think I cared a lot what people thought too, and now I'm kind of just like, I do care, and believe me, it still hurts when someone says something negative, but I've, you know, trying to find healthier ways of dealing and messing and coping, you know, with certain things. Yeah.
I wanted to ask more, like a lot of pieces that I that wrote about you were really heavy on the name dropping, you know, and yeah. I think that's kind of important, I guess, to sort of demarcate the lineage.
I don't think it's important.
I mean,
but I hear you why I think it's important. I don't think it's true. I don't, because of just different things. I don't, and some of the things that they say are not true, you know. So some, a lot of stuff that's out there is not true. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yes, it's like this album kind of sounds like, I don't know, more like Eiler, and this other one sounds more like, and it's very much, I think it doesn't really give the space to acknowledge you as you know, in yeah. your own right, a musician, you know.
Thank you, yeah. But another thing in that too is like, you know, people compare things to things and tie things, but that's not really what, like, if they really loved Albert Eiler, they would never compare someone to Albert Eiler, do you know what I mean? If these yeah. people really love his music and worship him as much as they think and say, they would never compare someone that is any age, but especially a young, you know, I was like kind of a kid, you know, to something that it's like you're missing his whole entire point of his message in everything. You're just being this person that is not at all what I don't think he was trying to do with his music, you know. So that's another point I hope people listen to. And also, no one ever, I mean, in general, these people that have these opinions never ask me what I think about him or what I've tried to understand from him. It's always like this sound comparison, never like anything deeper or more,
mm-hmm.
Which I think is a real like injustice to his sound and his soul and everything that he gave and went through in this life. But that's just my opinion. So, you know, they'll continue to do what they will, you know.
Yeah.
But I hope things end up shifting in all directions. And, you know, even... I won't get too deep, but even people using like God's name for the sake of, you know, taking things in people's lives and entire communities and parts of the universe for what, you know, for what, God's name? I don't think it has much to do with that, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't think that it has anything to do with God's message either and all these things. And you know, yesterday was National Women's Day, and you know, all the sacred women's and all the women that are fighting entire injustices their entire life and having to overface all these things. That's what I was thinking about yesterday. And everything going on in the U.S. and everything going on in Palestine and everything going on in the most intense injustices that have always been going on in this planet because of people trying to take things that are don't belong to them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that too.
Yeah, and I see that kind of like we were talking about this devotion beforehand, you know, as also a subconscious act. But I really strongly feel that there are evils out there which are kind of antithetical to this, you know, that
yeah.
there's something that just is so dark that cannot really be brought out into, you know, no matter how you try to, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm.
For sure. There's a cat over there. But it's gone. But for sure, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, like, I think another thing too is like addiction, right? Like, I grew up with parents that were very addicted to different things, like really intense things. And I remember, I have memories of them before they were addicted to things, and then now, you know, in their own ways. But I think addiction is a lot like that. Like, it's the most evilest thing, you know, and it's, but in reality, it's like the underlying thing is someone trying to feel something that we all deserve to feel, but they just need something else to get there a little sooner, you know, and it causes in the cycle because that's a quick way to get to it. Like what I was saying, like just because, you know, you get to the goal does not mean that's actually the goal, you know, it's mm-hmm. like the little journey of it. But I think it's like this, I don't know if you understand it, but like even something so evilly disguised, I think in the center of it, it does have pure intentions. It's just like everything around it is corrupted and doesn't make sense, and it's, you know, but to anything that is hurtful to other people should never be done. Taking things, you know, for the sake of money and using God's name on it is not something that should ever exist. But that's all that's existed, you know, especially in the United States, you know. Look at what the entire United States is built upon, you know.
Yeah.
Is evil, you know, evilness and taking, you know, injustice entirely so.
Yeah. I mean, now it made me think of these sort of false gods or whatever, you know, like, we're talking about the transcendental feeling that you kind of aspire to when playing, and sometimes it happens and it doesn't, but that's like a pure version of, I guess, what you would want to do.
Yeah.
Maybe get high, but and feel at some point that maybe this is the same kind of thing you're getting, and you're chasing the same thing, but
there's... And you can cut this out as well, but I think that, like the stuff going on in the States right now, in the United States, it's horrific, and it's so worrisome, and a lot of my friends that are transgender now potentially can't travel because of a gender not being listed, and certain things like that, horrific and messing up the lives and careers of so many of my friends, and so many things going on, and completely going backwards and backwards and backwards and backwards. And but talking about false gods, like, I'm not gonna fucking name his name because he'll fucking appear, you know, somewhere, but the guy that's in the office right now in the United States, he is like this false prophet to people that are like, are so in poverty and, you know, stuck in these cycles. And I can't speak from all over the United States, but I can speak from the South, that there's a lot of these people down there that are so desperate to have a better life. They do anything, and they don't know how to break the cycle. And even, you know, where I come from, they don't know how to break the cycle. It's like endless cycles of, you know, abuse, of trauma, of poverty, of nothingness, basically. And you have this guy that appears that's saying all these beliefs that that's because of this vicious endless cycle that's down there that resonates with you. And then he's like, we'll do anything to make you have cheaper this, you're going to be rich. That's literally what he's saying. Like, I will make you rich, which rich people, people that think that that's the solution to everything, which it's no solution to anything, getting people that are only trying to be rich have money, then it creates all these types of sorts of evils. But so anyway, it's really worrisome, and that's what we've all been thinking about. And it's just, it's absolutely sickening. Like, if I think about it hard enough, it's just like my body starts, like, it's just, it's disgusting. And 3 more years, 4 more years of this dude, oh my god. So yeah, I think it's important to say that too, because sometimes people think that people are tied to the person up top, and that's just not what's going on at all too, in a lot of ways. So
all right, so dear listeners, you're kindly invited to the concert in Gromka today at 8 o'clock. The doors open at 7:30. So we'll be presenting Bachti. And there's also Istok Korean performing opening. So
beautiful.
Yeah.
Hope to see you. Be a blessing to have you there. Thanks for listening. See y'all on the other side.
All right. See you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Poslušali ste komad The Drop and the Sea Zohe Amba. Eriš intervju je pripravil Jan Kopač.
Intervju Radija Študent.